thank you for tuning in to the Jason Stone Radio Show, powered up by Bad Fish Outdoors. We got podcast number 38 going down tonight, and we are with Jeff Vandermortel, and we're going to talk some summer muskies. How you doing tonight, Jeff?
Yeah, I'm doing really good, man. Good to be back.
Yeah, so you got a banquet tonight, huh?
Yeah, we got our muskie meat banquet tonight over in St. Germain. I think it's at like 6 or 6:30, heading over there. And, yeah, wrapping up, getting ready to head to Canada here. And been a good season so far.
Where are you going in Canada?
Heading up to Lake of the Woods with a couple of buddies for a couple of days. And then coming back.
Very nice. Very nice. Yeah, let's get into this musky stuff here. So as far as this summer is going for us, why don't you give us kind of a – a synopsis on summer here for you.
Well, I think as most people know, we started off with kind of a wonky spring there. All that snow and ice made things somewhat difficult, I think, especially for the non-musky fishing early on. I mean, the walleyes were great all the way through for the most part. They still are. The walleye bite's still fantastic. Yeah, as far as the muskies go, it did turn off maybe a little bit at first, but it stayed warm and kept everything going. And we're seeing, I think, a lot of chunky fish as a result of that. Seems like those years where you get nice, warm, stable weather, pushing through that spawn, get them through the process nice and fast and easy, a good week or 2 weeks in that stable, warm weather without any cold dips in there. They seem to just be healthier fish all around. And right out of the gate this year, we pounded them from start to finish so far. So it's been really good. Water temps have been a little higher than normal up here. We have had a couple of days where we've taken the midday off, last couple of days in particular, just with the we started talking. You know, low 80s, it is getting a little bit warm to be out there, you know, midday, especially with no wind or anything like that. It can be really hard on the fishermen as well as the fish. But overall, it's been a great year. Wheat growth is lacking in some lakes. Other lakes, it's right on par. The last couple weeks here, though, I've definitely seen a change. A lot of lakes are off earlier in the year. Most of them kind of correlated with lakes that had poor wheat growth or far less than normal wheat growth. We're way behind schedule. The last couple stretches of sunny, warm weeks here really seem to kind of either one or two things that bolster up the weed growth in some lakes where it kind of caught up to where it should have been all along. And in other cases, the weed growth is still only okay or it's getting better, not quite to where it normally should be, but the fish have since turned on and come to use that structure, and it's been very, very fruitful for us.
Isn't that crazy how, you know, you get that little bit of a slow start to the summer, and you've had one of the warmest summers we've had in years, and that weed growth is still not caught up to where it should be.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty crucial for that. Yeah, for sure. And again, it's, you know, funny how it works, you know, why one lake can be across the road and lose the ice at the same time and be, you know, behind the eight ball for weed growth, and the other one can be right on par. You know, who really knows? I mean, I'm sure it varies case by case. But, yeah, it's something, man. I mean, a lot of the places that you really expect to see some of that lush, deep weeds, in particular the deeper stuff,
right,
was just not really there this year until, and like I said, in a couple of cases, it caught back up. The last, say, about, what is this year, about third week of August, you know, about some, you know, after about the end of July there is about when a lot of that stuff started to catch up. The first week of August, I would say, is where we started to see a lot of that stuff just kind of, you know, you kind of go back, you've been hitting them on and off all summer, and each time you go there, you're a little disappointed that it's not up yet, and then you get there one day, and it's like, boom, wow, they grew 2 feet, here it is, and the fish were there, so. Not that you do, you know, you can alter your tactics and stuff, but certainly it's nice to be in a lake where those fish are nice and targetable, where they're on structure versus having to search for them off the break, especially when you're guiding. Customers typically, you know, something that's defined structure can be a lot easier to say, you know, cast right there today to those weeds rather than, hey, really pay attention and pie chart this out, you know, fan cast, and, you know, methodically pick apart a body of water. It's just not as conducive in many cases.
Right now, have you seen more consistency on a, let's say, a lake class or like your smaller lakes have been better, your medium, your big, or has it been all over the board?
It's been all over the board. Really, I know, you know, I've talked to quite a few guys over the course of the year here, and, you know, some of the guys are talking about how tough the Cisco, you know, Cisco Forge-based lakes were really tough early on, and we still found some pretty good success out there. There were definitely lakes that were off, but I wouldn't say it was necessarily all by lake class. Some of it just is kind of geography related. You know, maybe an area just either hard to say, you know, why, if I knew exactly why. It wouldn't be any fun, right? But just knowing that it is, that, you know, some of them flip the switch. But you know how it goes from year to year. I mean, I've had lakes that were, you know, extremely good in the past. And this, you know, certainly not the first to go around with those lakes. I've been fishing for years, and it's like, ah, man, it's just a tough year out here for whatever reason. But a lot of times you come back later in the year, especially after a major weather change, that can set a lot of those things in motion and bring that right back to where it should be. And other lakes just seem to never turn on, or maybe you just missed the window. It's hard to really say, right? I mean,
yeah.
Kind of like going back on a big fish at Moon, and, well, the fish didn't eat. Like, well, how do you know it didn't eat a big meal 5 seconds before you got there? You just don't know. There's variables to compensate for that you just can't really always know.
Exactly. Now, with the differences, you know, I was going to ask you, like, differences from last summer to this summer. Obviously, some differences in weeds that you actually see every year, depending on whatever in the spring. But have you seen any differences in bait fish?
You know, it depends on the lake. Definitely a lot of lakes. I mean, I've seen a lot of bait off the breaks this year. Not that that's atypical, but it seems like just everything had a pretty good hatch. I don't know. I mean, again, it varies by system, certainly. But in the situation where we've gone to shift off the break line and fish that I wouldn't say suspended bait, because it's still relatively close to a break line. Sometimes the bait's just in the weeds or slightly outside of it, and you adjust your approach accordingly. But it seems like it's been, you know, very, very plentiful just about everywhere we've gone. The bug hatches seem to come a little bit later this year, too, which I think shifted some lakes. That was probably a big factor on some lakes more than others, you know, the ones that are, especially ones that are known to get those big hatches. You know, it certainly happened, but it seemed like it was just a little later than in the past few seasons, which can change patterns of those fish if they spend more time out there on the mud flats when the bugs are emerging.
Right. And have you done any a chasing of the suspended, you know, say off the break lines, like a true suspended? Have you done any of that this summer?
Yeah, you know, especially at times where, you know, you run around and not to say that you go to a lake that you haven't necessarily been on or been dialed in on when you're with customers, but sometimes a lake falls into your rotation that you may know well, and you get there, and as we talked about where the weeds are, gosh, I just thought they'd be up by now, and you still end up pushing out a fish or two. But in those situations where that weed growth was not as good as I'd hoped to see or didn't seem to be harboring those fish, you just slide off the break a little bit, and a lot of times those fish are hanging either there or maybe suspended in what some would call open water off of it. There's always fish in that open water, as I think you know as well as I do and many others. They're definitely out there, and whether those are the same fish rotating on and off structure or not, it can vary. But, yeah, we've done well with some open water fish, and certainly on some of the sand grass bites, too. We, you know, they had its moments. Pretty light switchy as sand grass bites tend to be, but when they turn on, they can turn on in a big way. I guess no different than anything, but it can be very feast or famine.
Yeah, I know what little amount of trolling I've done the last 2 years, we've done terrible. And I haven't been able to get out in June. My June has been pretty slammed with other stuff. I haven't been able to put that June in, which is my best time. But the trolling for me has been, I mean, subpar would be, being generous.
Yeah, I was actually pretty surprised that Eagle River came tournament on the PMTC. I mean, it was overall a real tough bite, and, of course, good fishermen found fish, or just, you know, the people that were lucky enough to land the fish that they hooked. Certainly plenty of good fishermen hooked fish that they didn't land, I'm sure. But that was one I was really excited to kind of watch closely and see what we got for results. I had spent some time on there right prior to the tournament. I did not fish the tournament, was not in it, but was just kind of curious. You know, the mayflies were hatching quite literally as the tournament was beginning. It shifted almost overnight, a day or two prior there, where you had masses of stuff floating all over the place out there where they were really starting to emerge. And there were certainly plenty of bait fish with it. And I was just curious to see how those guys, and you've got a field full of, I mean, more or less professional trollers, some of those guys, and they're extremely good at what they do, to see how they would do in that situation. Because, as mentioned, I mean, well, you know, it hasn't been open that long here, so we don't really know what it's going to be like under every set of circumstances. I was kind of surprised to not see it one trolling out there, and not to see some of the trollers really have some increased success over what one might expect just by the sheer presence. Or maybe it was just there was too much going on out there. It's hard to really say, but, you know, they put in that amount of time out there, it really didn't seem to be super lopsided, you know, with somebody coming in with 8 fish or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, usually that the mayfly hatch is really good for that type of presentation. But overall, speaking of presentations, does anything really shined out of the ordinary this year?
You know, small bucktails, it's probably had a better bucktail year than I've had in quite a while. Last year, I think a lot of the good bucktail bites that were going on, we were throwing a lot more topwater. I think the conditions were just more conducive to it. You just had a lot more of those cloudier, rainier days, which this summer, I mean, we have had a lot of flat, calm, sunny days. You know, today is no exception. We had a little clouds this morning. I mean, I wasn't on the water today. Today and yesterday are probably two best days. Did a little walleye fishing last night, but certainly out of the last several, I mean, it's been flat, calm, clear blue skies, and hot. I mean, and flat, calm is normally not a thing. We get calm days, but not to the point where it's 11, noon, 1 o'clock, and there still hasn't been even a ripple on the water.
Yeah.
You know, that can be some pretty brutal fishing. We've had that on a, you know, several day a week basis in many cases, all season. So, again, we just haven't had the same weather patterns as last year. As you mentioned, it's been hotter. But we did exceedingly well on bucktails this year, smaller blades in particular. You know, that 700 size, 700 size, 800 size, you know, eights, double eights, single eights, stuff of that nature really produced better this year. The topwater bite when the conditions presented themselves has been absolutely on fire when it presents itself. But you know, you can go out one day and, you know, hook 5-6 fish on topwater and go back up the next, and again, you're back to flat, calm, blue, sunny skies. Not that you can't catch a fish with all clouds and rain or, you know, darker conditions for top water or low light conditions in the mornings and evenings, but just didn't seem to be there the way it had been in years past. Bucktails definitely kicked it up this year. We've got 114 fish in the boat this year so far, and a good quarter of them or more have been on bucktails. And then, of course, you got your mix of rubber and suex. Some jerk baits, too. There's one jerkbait that we've been using a lot this last 2 years, the SRJ from Pandemonium Tackle. The dive rise type of bait like that, it fills a nice little niche. We caught quite a few fish on that this year as well. And actually, we did probably better on it last year, too, but I think just the higher water temps have kind of hampered that a little bit. They seem to like that type of a presentation, not just necessarily that bait, which they like it, but it's just that type of emotion seems to be better in a little bit lower water temps, more that upper 60s, low to mid 70s, rather than this mid and upper 70s continuous. Suex have produced quite a few fish for us. And then, of course, a good healthy mix of medusas, I guess, on toads, and certainly several on bulldogs as well.
Nice. So have you been mostly keying on the weed areas, or have you started to hit any of the rock structure?
You know, during some of the tougher bites we had this year, we had a pretty exceptional rock bite going. I know there's a lot of guys that were struggling, and it's not that maybe not seeing fish, but just struggling to put them in the bag. But we still seem to find, again, I normally associate that bite with having pretty heavy wind and heat. But we've certainly found times when that wasn't the case. I mean, they just happened to be hanging around those rocks, whether it was due to, you know, pressure along the weeds. There were certainly other people fishing those lakes, and maybe that pushed a few of those fish onto that type of structure. Hard to say, but there's certainly some bait around it. And so it's one of those deals where if not A, then B, you try through the weeds at a prime time and, you know, either see one lazy fish or not see what you're looking for, slide out for the end of the moon and go hit a rock point and stick two fish and 10 casts. It's kind of speaks for itself. You know, it's like, hey, they're using it. And not necessarily in lakes that don't have weeds, in lakes that have lush, good weed bites and good weed beds. Some of those more aggressive fish were hanging on the rocks. I'm sure the fish are still in the weeds. You know that they're there. That's usually the case with the weed bite. It's just a matter of getting them to go. But those fish on the rocks seem pretty hungry. So, yes, we have had that, especially about July. July was really good. We had a really good rock pattern going in July to the point where it was, you know, you're pretty much going to get your bite or two a day. And on several different lakes, not just one in particular, maybe lakes that were similar to each other or sort of similar to each other, certainly. But, yeah, it definitely produced a lot of fish for us. And then that was a lot of rubber, a couple on jerk baits, like double Ds, stuff like that, you know, the bigger minnow bait type stuff, as well as a mix of rubber and suex and jerk baits, as one might expect, even a few in bucktails.
Right, yeah, that's something I remember. This was, I don't know how long ago, 8 years ago, 10 years ago, when September was there, the water temperature actually went up in September. It was hot and flat every single day. And that month, it's like you could almost set your watch by having fish action during your moon times. Now, have the moon times been important this summer with that similar flat calm stuff
Absolutely.
We've had an overabundance of?
Yeah, yeah. Anytime you get those where that high pressure system settles in and just those cloudless skies, especially when it's flat calm, you certainly are finding your most active fish around moon. Weather, of course, can change things like that, especially if you get them coinciding. It's definitely a time to be on the water if you've got it overlapping with a moon phase. But yeah, moon has been very crucial for us this year. Certainly, when the bite gets good, and I think it's probably true of any type of musky fish, and the bite gets good, you start finding more of those off-period fish. That's when you start getting your 3, 4, 5, 6 fish days, or at the very least, your opportunities at hooking 6, 8 fish. Versus just, you grind it out, grind it out, grind it out, come into moon, you're 10 minutes into moon and boom, stick a fish, or get a follow and stick a fish, then lose the fish, then stick another one, and then everything's done in about a 45-minute window. We've had certainly more of the latter than the former, just with the weather being the way it's been.
Yeah, five out of seven days a week.
Five out of the six.
It's been a weird, I just always remember you'd have these hot, humid stretch, and then you'd get like massive thunderstorms afterwards with a cool down, and then it would start over again. And this summer just seems to be, I forget the number they had for days over 80 degrees this year. It's been insane. And like you were saying, that flat calm, as I've been doing more of the walleye stuff this summer, and it's just insane, to have to go out and try to catch these walleyes in daytime conditions like that. But I don't recall ever seeing. Yeah. And, just I don't recall ever seeing this with the lack of thunderstorms with the amount of heat, because usually that generates more of the thunderstorm. Just really haven't seen a lot of those.
Right. Well, it makes for a good reset button. Anytime you get into kind of a funk like that where things start to flatten out and really get tough, and it might be, there's always a lake or two that's going. I mean, that really is a lot of times the secret sauce, is just knowing what lake hasn't popped yet, what lake. I mean, and that's really, there's no shortcut to that. Time on the water is the only way. I mean, we hit multiple lakes a day on most every occasion. I mean, I'm constantly bouncing around. You're constantly chasing, I don't want to say chasing a bite, but you're trying to figure out, keep your finger in as many pies as possible to know how many lakes are going as possible, as many lakes that are going as possible. And those periods don't last 3 weeks, it lasts a couple of days. Something changes, this one lake turns on, or this one type of lake, say, a good example up here, we've got a lot of the lakes that bloom out green, your arborvitae, big Saint Germain, your bearskin, your pickerel, a little arm also. Any of those ones that bloom out green are kind of their own deal, right? They kind of got their own thing going, and when that type of a lake can turn on, they can all be going, right? I mean, no magic lakes listed in there. They all get plenty of pressure. They all see plenty of guys. And then, but what's the difference in when one's good and when one's not? If you can figure out what makes it click, great. But just knowing that it is sometimes enough. You're on one type of water, say stained or clear water, and that's not going, go try some green bloom. If that's not going, go try some dark stain, And if none of those are going, maybe go try something that's coffee color, assuming it's not 95 degrees and flat calm out. Which has been the case plenty of days too. But you know what I mean? It's just, you're constantly, playing the devil's advocate and testing that hypothesis to see what's going. When you find it, you can really capitalize, but it's usually for just a limited period of time, especially with such tough weather conditions for such a prolonged period of time.
Yeah. And then, something I was going to ask you is, back when I was doing the, musky stuff a lot, and you'd be on a bite, you'd be on, say, a big Saint Germain or a Lake Tomahawk or something, and you had a pattern, you were hammering them. I never went and I would talk to other guys at the same time. I'm out suspended fishing, there's guys on a different lake casting, everybody's hammering them. And I never went and scouted new lakes under those conditions. That's when I stuck with where I was catching fish. And then when the fishing got tough and it went to shit, that's when I would go scout, and I think I did. I mean, you'd learn the lake a little bit, but as far as I was never able to pull off a fish on a great bite to go scout. And are you able to do some of that? Maybe a little more, like when the stuff is snapping, there's the right the weather pattern and everything. I mean, you know what I'm talking about?
I do. I know exactly what you're talking about. It's probably one of the hardest things that musky anglers face, because it's really hard to leave fish to find fish. But if you truly want to grow as an angler, you have to. There's a difference between going out and catching fish and going out and learning more about about the sport and about your, you know, about your domain, about your, what you have in, at your disposal for the number of lakes in your area. And yeah, if you can't pull the pin, and I mean, I'm very fortunate. I mean, I'm on the water 6-7 days a week for the vast majority of the muskie season until I leave in October for ducks. So, but I also have customers to produce for, right? So I can't just, you know, it's not like I just go pull off and go to a lake that I've never been to or haven't been to in 5 years or something like that, unless there was some reason for it. Like, you know, we boated 3 or 4 that morning. This lake is very similar. It's right down the road. Let's jump in there. I know it well. And we go out there and catch a couple fish. You know, sometimes that's the case, but you know, a lot of times you got to have a little bit of a pregame. You got to know a little bit about what's going on out there and make an educated guess. But yeah, you have to, especially for the volume of fishing I do, you just can't have, you know, 5-6 lakes and keep pounding the snot out of all of them. I did a lot of my homework prior to starting guiding. You know, I just spent, you know, just go to a different lake. We've talked about it before. Just, I'm just going to go to this lake today. I'm going to drive around for 2 hours. I'm going to see what it looks like. I'm going to see, you know, do my little homework before, maybe do a little research beforehand, of course, you know, to see what's in it, if there's any stocking on it, that kind of stuff. And hop out there, see what looks good, and cast it through a prime window, either a moon or a sunset or before a storm, whatever the case of the day may be, whatever I feel like the best window of the day would be. And, you know, if I caught a fish, so be it. If not, great. But then you still have added that to your repertoire, right? You've added that to your resume. You know that lake a little bit. And it gives you something to work on in the future.
Right.
So, yeah, you got to go, and you'll never know. You can go to a lake like that, and, as you said, in subpar conditions. And when things are tough, and it's, I think it goes along with the people that, you know, want to switch a bait every 25 minutes. It's like, I get people that tell me all the time, constantly, like, I just can't believe I haven't switched this bait. And it's like, well, you know, a lot of times I got multiple anglers throwing baits, so I might have a, you know, 3 different types of baits already going. So unless they want to switch rods between them, all 3 of these baits need to be in the water. You know, so there's something to be said for that. But at the same time, still, it's not like I'm on a lake and I've got a bucktail on and I'm changing out that bucktail every 25 minutes to try a different color. I already know what they want to eat. I already have confidence in a bait for that style of water or that lake in particular. And I'm going to have them throw it until we get bit. It's not usually a function of bait choice. If you spend any amount of time out there and are intimate with the system, it's usually just a function of knocking on enough doors until you find a hot customer.
Right. And while we're on lures, are there any new lures that you got in your boat this year that you've been impressed with?
Yeah, you know, that SRJ is one I mentioned earlier. There's always the standard producers. I mean, Suex, Medusas, like I said, Bulldogs, we've got some of the X-Toads. You know, your Lake X top waters. We caught a little bit of action on the Suic Nightwalker. All the usual suspects have certainly produced well, but stuff that's truly new. Actually, probably the one thing I've been the most impressed with, a lot of good stuff out there, but the one thing I've been the most really excited about is this, the Roswell Leader. I don't know if you've heard anything about that at all. I was talking about it a little bit last year at some of my seminars, and quite a few people ask and try to get a hold of them. I misunderstood, and I thought Jeff from Team Rhino had some at the show to sell, and I mentioned it, and I brought a couple on stage and did some demos with it, just kind of showing people that if you use a stiff wire leader, it's really an asset. It doesn't have any memory. It's not like the older heavy titanium or high titanium type of leaders on the market there where you get that brittleness, that real snap, even though it has a little memory. I've tested them for 2 years. I've caught, I don't know how many dozens and dozens of fish total on them, but I've got leaders, several leaders that have between 18 and 24 fish on them apiece, and they still look brand new. They really are great for those cases where you need that rigid wire leader. I run them on my Suex, glide baits, jerk baits, stuff where that typical traditional wire leader has been, key. I've also actually run them a couple for a little bit on some rubber baits, and there's some other guys that, Kevin has gotten them out to that have been having some success on that with a little bit of those longer leaders throwing stuff like where your Mag Dogs, your regular Medusa sizes, stuff of that larger caliber. And they've been catching fish on them, and those leaders have held up fantastically so far. So that is one. I mean, the cost is there. I think they're about $10 a piece, $10-$12 a piece, like any leader, really. Maybe slightly more expensive, but they're very affordable. And that has been. He seriously sent me 6 of them, Jason, and I used 2 all last year. I tied one on each of my jerkbait rods, ran them all season. I got them to me in like maybe mid June, ran them all the way through September, October. Of course, retied knots and stuff plenty. But they were great. I think I lost one on a crib or something like that, and I retied one of them at the beginning of this year. And I ran a couple more this year, just kind of switched them out, changing up the gauges, just, you know, testing out stuff for them. And again, not to get too belabored on the point and sound like an infomercial, but they're legit. and they work really, really well.
Well, that's cool.
That,
yeah, I mean,
yeah, he's the same guy that makes that SRJ version. It's the same. Slow rise jerk is what it stands for. It's like a pull pause bait. It's got a tight wobble, a little soft tail on the back. Pretty cool little bait.
Nice. Yeah, there's always something. I mean, it may not be a lure. Maybe it's a leader, but something new, it seems, you know,
yeah.
It's always, they're improving
I mean,
so much
shit. I mean,
it's
not too often you get excited. It's not too often you get excited about an advancement terminal tackle, but, I mean, before I had these, man, I was ripping through those steel wire leaders pretty regularly, especially with the number of followed casts you get as people are learning to toss with something like a mm-hmm. Suic or a glider. You get one cast with that, and the hooks are wrapped, and they give it one pull, and you know how it is. It's bent in half. You bend it back and stuff, but then you kind of, you know, eventually you're going to have weak
right.
points and stuff. And we just have had absolutely zero with this. I've run it as hard as I possibly can, and it's held up incredibly.
Nice. And then do you use any of the side imaging?
Absolutely. Yeah, I've been running that a lot. I picked up the Helix 10 Megatrip this year. Been really, really, really happy with it. I mean, I don't typically cast when I'm guiding. I'm usually running the boat, sitting down, especially if you've got three customers and stuff. But if I got a single customer, I'm casting. But I'm still running from the back, watching my imaging. But on a normal day, I mean, in most systems, with the exception of something where you're fishing maybe super shallow at times, I mean, we'll image anywhere from, you know, one or two to nine or ten muskies a day, where you can see very clearly the outline of the fish, exactly where it's
right.
positioned. It's been a huge asset, for sure.
Yeah, that's one of those things I was thinking, like, when we first got the GPS mapping units with the map cards, and after a couple days, it's like, how are we going to go back to fishing without this if we ever had to? And I would think that the side imaging would also be one of those things. It's like, this is just fantastic.
It's well on its way, man. It also, if you're on, you know, in a year like this where we talked about how the weed growth isn't always great. I mean, obviously, if you're guiding every day, you don't have as much time as if you're running three or four trips a week, if you're out still fishing on your own or whatever. To be on lakes and necessarily go up and get in intimately familiar with every single spot that you fish. I mean, I can hop on a lake, and as I'm running down, I can tell by what it looks like on my side imaging screen exactly how thick it is. You know what I mean? As I'm going along, you know, maybe one of my favorite weed lines on a lake I hadn't been to yet this year, or it's, you know, haven't been there in a while since the weeds had come up, and you can see, you know, you're going along, you're like, it's kind of bald. I never even need to make a run in there. You know, you kind of make a run through there. I'm usually would just cast it, right? But you can eliminate water very quickly. It's a lot easier to swing into a spot that you know fish use, run through it for 25 minutes with customers throwing baits and see what you got sitting there. Then to go out on your own, drive through, go up and actually drive over it with sonar or visibly look at it. Some of the weeds about where you can't see, especially if it's a dark day, you know, it's flat, calm and sunny like we have this year. Good year for scouting, I guess you could say, but visibility is at a max. But it's indispensable. For me, I certainly could fish without it, but I wouldn't want to. It's nice.
Yeah, that's one of those things where I know on certain lakes that I used to fish how valuable the knowledge of the location of cribs were. And they were not easy to find. And now, you know, that's kind of really opened that box up.
Well, right. And people can go back with consistency, certainly. And, you know, anybody can do it versus kind of just the old lining it up and trying to remember exactly where it is and making enough casts to appreciably cover the area until you're satisfied that you've covered the crib. Now it's more, you go in there, I got my waypoint there, I know it's exactly 33 feet at such and such angle from me, and boom, 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 make my cast, and I can move on to the next one. It's incredibly effective. I mean, there's a lot more cribs out there than a guy would think. I've imaged three sunken boats this year. What else did we find? Three sunken boats. I'm not sure what I found. It looked almost like a car frame or some sort of a frame. Like, it could have been an old piece of a dock or something, but it was kind of a boxy, not a crib. It was like kind of weird in shape. It was in the rain. I didn't get a good picture. I took pictures of several of the boats and just all the cool stuff that you see with it. And once you really learn how to read it, picking out other stuff like your bait fish and that. And the guys that fish big water in Lake the Bay, it's a little bit easier there because a lot of those fish are holding on sand and stuff. It's not as heavy a weed cover as many of our fish might like to use. But we get situations like that, mud flats and stuff. You can see those walleye sitting down there, man. They're there. And especially if you get in late June, I had probably one of the coolest images as far as walleyes go. And they were there because I did fish the lake back-to-back days. It's rare that I fish a lake 2 days back-to-back unless it's really, really hot. But this one was really, really hot. And both days, there's like a weed hump out there, and there was a big pack of, you could see straight what they were. They're just great big old walleyes hanging down there, maybe about a dozen of them or so. You know, you can see the outline of them perfectly. Like, they were just hanging just in such a way. They're just off the brink. And then I went back there about a week later, and they were gone. But pretty cool. You can actually see the shape of the walleye. I mean, they're all bigger fish. I'm assuming they're all, like, mid-20s or so. You know, maybe bigger, mm-hmm. maybe a couple smaller. But you could very definitively see what they were. Pretty cool stuff.
Yeah, then did you see that video that Eric Hadia did this winter with where they were, or this last winter, where they were using it under the ice? To, you know,
the side imaging or the panoptics?
Yeah, I forget, but they were looking to the side, and they were locating, okay, there's fish. They'd go in a 360, okay, there's a school of fish, whatever, 40 feet that way. Yeah,
yeah, and, that was the panoptic. I think, was that, are you sure, was that Aaron Weeby? Aaron Weeby that did that, or was that Hadia did
it? It was Hadia. Yeah, it was Hadia, the one I saw, but
no, I didn't see
either
Aaron.
Way, you know,
I mean, some. Aaron had one, something similar to that. I know where they punched it into the pond. Yeah, you could tell. I've actually played with those units on one occasion, and I'm going to pick one up for this winter. It'll be fun. I'll let you know how it goes. I'm pretty excited to use it.
Yeah, yeah, it just adds to the fun, you know, and it's like, that's another...
I'll cut down on the number of holes you need to find for suspended crappies, no doubt.
Right, and that's our one of those things, I think, with all these advancements that we have. I would really like to see, this is kind of off the subject, but boy, I would like to see some lower bag limits on a lot of these lakes for certain things. I think the mentality is starting to change now. I mean, you've had the catch and release walleye fishery on the Anakwa chain now for 3.5 years on a 5-year shutdown, and it's really bringing the walleyes back. And at first it was, you know, the homeowners and or the lakefront owners, everybody's in a, I mean, they're not happy about it, but then when they see the results, and I'd like to see some more of that, maybe a new angle, and I mean, who cares what the hell I think, but I would like to see a new angle taken with maybe doing some catch and release only lakes, more of them, and to really, really limit that harvest to help these lakes, because there are just, I mean, you still have to catch them no matter how, all the tools in the world, all the technology and all the fancy gear, you still got to catch them.
Yeah.
I mean, what do you think about that? Doing some more like shutdowns and dropping bag limits.
Yeah, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the Monaco situation. I think it's definitely something I'd like to see, you know, carried out and replicated in other places. And I think that, you know, after this is all done, I mean, that kind of cooperation between the tribes and sports anglers to see a fishery come back the way that one is coming back is pretty encouraging. I mean, it just goes to show how much of an effect harvest can have on a system. But also, you know, the stocking methods out there, they were dumping in fry for a long period of time. They weren't getting the recruitment that they needed to sustain either naturally or through the stocking, you know,
right,
to the fish that were actually making it to an appreciable size. And, you know, maybe it took them a little longer than maybe you'd like to think, but those guys get their hands tied too. We've talked about that before. A lot of those biologists, even if they say, hey, this is what we need to do, it's not always an option. It's just not quite that simple in most of those cases. But hopefully something like this, you know, no different than lowering that panfish bag. It's got to be kind of proven on paper before those guys can really say, hey, you know, this really does work. This is what works here. This is what's worked on a similar system. Let's give it a shot out here and see if it doesn't work. I think that's a great strategy. You know, something we've heard about, you know, in recent years about Butte's air, with the walleye population being really kind of a grim prospect out there, pretty low numbers. It would be another, you know, but, you know, historically it caught a lot of fish out there. It'd be maybe another candidate for that. And there's certainly a certain number of other lakes where it wouldn't be bad to see. But yeah, I agree. And I think when those systems do come back online, we'll see how this goes. You know, we all know how Kentuck turned out. That thing got whacked pretty hard when they took off that 28-inch bag limit, and it took a year or two and they really crushed them. But there's still plenty of walleyes out there now. I mean, years later, after things settled down and the Monaco chain certainly a little bit harder body of water to deplete than something like a Kentuck, where it's less feature, you know,
right,
a lot more featureless areas, probably a little bit easier pickings there than something like, you know, Lake Tom or Monaco. I mean, it's a pretty complex system. A lot of those fish use in open water, so you're going to have some of that protection. But it would be nice to see how it, you know, how it turns out after they take it off. You know, how long it really lasts. I believe they talked about a 2-bag out there, 18 inches.
Yeah.
I believe that will be the plan. I personally would love to see an upper end slot put out there. I mean, there's definitely some dinosaurs roaming around out there. you know, through, you know, functions of something just as simple as they haven't been getting caught because people weren't walleye fishing, because a lot of people had just given up walleye fishing out there to begin with because there just weren't that many walleyes left out there. I mean, there are some, certainly, but not to the point where your average guy is going out there and trying to catch them, because the ones that were out there, a lot of them were larger. And, you know, but here, now you've got a 5-year stretch during this study where a lot of those bigger fish aren't getting handled. You've got, you know, the years previous to this study where, you know, people, you know, figure, you know, 1 to 5, 6 years, however long it took people to kind of give up. You didn't see many people out there walleye fishing over the last, you know, prior to this study. Most of the angling effort, well, I would say, was targeted at other things. Certainly not all, but a lot of it, you know, bass, panfish, that kind of stuff, muskies, pike. It'd be nice to see that, but put an upper end slot on maybe some of these lakes that have that true trophy potential, you know, maybe a release, because, I mean, let's face it, when they take this protection off, it's going to bring in crowds of people, and with good reason, the way that Kentuck did. And it's going to see a lot more angler effort per acre out there, and it'd be maybe nice to protect some of those trophy fish. But
that
they're not going to fish it out. You know, there'll be some out there still, but especially if they continue to stock the way they do.
Yeah, the couple I've caught while bass fishing the chain, you know, it seems like they're averaging about 17, 18 inches, and that's that first advanced fingerling class that they stocked is now, you know, 16, 18 inches. And what worries me is that when it does open, they're going to be over 20 inches, and it would be nice to even see the 20 to 24 slot on there, because the majority of those fish are going to be over the 18 inch size limit, and it's also going to be, I think it's going to be a 5-year evaluation following it, so they're going to, I think, reevaluate it every year, because this is going to be the model for what to do on other lakes. And like I said, you know, let's say you shut down Little and Big Arb for 3 years, and then the next year, say you shut down Squirrel and Buckskin or something. But so then every year you had maybe a lake family or a lake area coming off of that to spread that pressure out a little bit as well.
Yeah, I think that helps. But especially the one thing I think that this lake, I mean, I know you're just using those as examples, but I think the one thing that this lake doesn't have that those lakes all do have is a very good self-sustaining walleye population. Certainly some of them have been augmented with stocking at one time or another, but a lot of those glyphic lakes, you know, your Squirrels, your Big Arbs, I mean, they have good NR, and in the Minocqua chain, it used to have some. I mean, I don't know all the particulars on it, but certainly there were walleyes out there, and it just, you know, for whatever reason, just wasn't doing what it needed to be doing, including with the stocking. And so they augmented it, and hey, here we go. We got it back up and running. So even with that, I mean, you know, so you got an 18-inch size limit, maybe put on a 24 to 28-inch protected slot or something a little bit larger, just, or 26 to 30 or something. I mean, I guess that 30-inch mark's pretty big. They're out there, certainly, but, you know, but something where you can maybe give those fish that have made it through and some of the remnants that have been out there beforehand a little additional protection with increased, you know, notably increased angling effort to come in the years after the restrictions lifted.
Yeah, because I just think, you know, it's all a mentality thing. And you know how a muskie and a bass are considered sport fish. Nobody really considers keeping them anymore. Crappies and your gills, your perch, your walleyes are food fish, and your northern pike is a garbage fish. And to see that, I've seen it change a little bit with the walleyes, where more guys are viewing that as a sport fish.
Certainly.
And to get that changed a little bit to where if you're going out, you don't have to kill every walleye that's legal, and you don't have to kill every 25-inch walleye you catch. The guys that are out there a lot aren't killing a 25-incher anyway. But, you know, it's kind of changing a little bit. I mean, can you imagine if they shut down the Willow and the Rainbow for 5 years, the walleye fishing you'd have? It would be like Lake of the Woods.
Or even if they just put a slot on out there, I mean, like they have now, you know, like I said, I think we're already seeing some of those benefits. That 20 to 24 inch slot, you know, that might give them some of that protection. But I agree, man. Some of those systems take a pretty sound beating, man. I mean, there's a lot of fish ripped out of those lakes. I mean, they sustain it.
Right.
I don't know how sometimes, you know, once you really get to know just how many fish are coming out of there, you know, some of those guys, especially where it's like, I grew up before, some of those guys that are out there just day after day after day after day. Like, this guy killed 100 walleyes out of this lake this year, but what are you going to do? I mean, you're out there every day. I mean, can only do so much. I mean, it's just,
well,
it's amazing that they can sustain it, but they seem to. But you're right. I mean, I don't think some sort of arrest or maybe I don't know. I think a 20 to 24 inch protected spot this year being probably one of the better examples of it with that late spawn and stuff. It really saved a lot of fish this year. We caught a tremendous number of fish over the 20 inch mark this year. And out of the, I don't know how many hundreds, I think our best day, we had a 72 fish day up here and, you know, four over 24 and a bunch in that like 19 to 23 inch range, a whole bunch of them. And it was just, and we hit the lake just right, or two different lakes actually. And we just, it was just exceptional. And the quality was there. I mean, we were catching like 12 inches. It was all nice fish. Got into those females and got into them heavy. I mean, it was just a one over, or the three over 15. We could have, I mean, not that, I don't care. We kept two fish over 20 out of the hundreds and hundreds of walleyes we caught this year. I mean, we kept two fish over 20 in my boat all year. One was a hooked one deep on a rip and wrap where it took it down in, caught it in the gills. It was like a 21. And another one was a kid's first walleye, or his biggest walleye. It was like a 21 and a half, and it was on a 1 over 14 inch lake, and so he kept that one, you know, big deal. We let go another 6, 8, 10, all that same caliber over the course of that day because the fishing was just that good. So, I mean, yeah, like you said, a lot of the guys probably aren't keeping those big ones, myself especially not, but the other thing I think helped us is for walleyes this year, and I guess we started out with muskies, and here we are in walleyes, but it has been an exceptional year for walleyes. But the other thing you're seeing is a lot of that stocking that they had signed off on in 2012, a lot of it's coming to fruition right now. There's a lot of those lakes that were jammed full of walleyes, and as well they should be, you know, with those advanced growth fingerlings, and a lot of those lakes, you know, 5 years later, it's about what you're looking at to get to that 14 to 16 inch range for walleyes. On most lakes, some lakes are certainly more than that, some lakes are certainly below it. But that's a good rule of thumb for those advanced growth fingerlings, you know, about 5 years later. And, you know, wow, we're starting to see lakes that weren't necessarily somewhere I'd stop in and go walleye fish prior, that maybe 15 years ago I would have been good or something like that, or had a reputation for being a good walleye lake. But you're seeing a lot of that stuff kind of come full circle now, where you have an additional number of fish in the system just by virtue of that increased stocking effort across the board there, where you can go out and get a meal of walleyes on a lot more lakes now than I would say that you could have been, say, 5 years ago.
Yeah, I'm excited that they're doing this. It's finally taken some progressive steps towards improving, because basically 5 years ago, I said to hell with putting the money into the walleye fishing here. It's just not going to happen. And they proved me wrong, which I'm very, very happy about, obviously. But to see it coming back like that, and, you know, there's guys out all, I mean, if you were putting full time into walleye fishing, you'd be catching them all the time too. And,
absolutely.
And so it's better, you know, these last 3 years, just with other guides and looking at guides that go after the walleyes all the time, and they're not keeping a pile, and they're bouncing a lot of different lakes, not over harvest one lake. The walleye fishing's actually pretty damn good around here.
It really is. I mean, a good example was I ran two walleye trips in the past 6 weeks. That's it. I went out, it's been muskies every day, 7 days a week, run lots of doubles, been out a ton. You know, of course, I see walleye all the time. My graph, you know, every day. You always got scouting, right? Preparing for ice fishing, preparing for, you know, your eyes always on the graph, especially if you're not casting, you know. But we went out, so you know, I've got the knowledge, of course, of being on the water. I know where these fish are sitting. It's just a function of going back and catching them. I mean, not to oversimplify it, but when you find a good pot of walleyes, you're out there in relatively decent conditions. You're going to get them if you know what you're doing. And we did. We went out. I took some customers up. They were up from Maryland. They're here for 4 days, and of the 4 days, they did 4 half-day trips. And one of the days, he said, one of the days, we just need a break from musky fishing. We're going to go catch, we don't care, walleyes, bass, whatever. We're not keeping anything. We don't care to keep anything. We take off, but we didn't. We're staying in the hotel. I didn't really have any, you know, need to keep anything. Just let's go catch something besides muskies, give our backs a rest and that. Went out, pounded 2 dozen walleyes, a couple bass, a couple crappies, a couple rock bass. I mean, went back on some fish that I had seen and ball musky fishing, and they were right where they were supposed to be. Last night I took my little sister out. I had today and yesterday off to kind of get ready for Canada here. Took my little sister out last night. We went out, whacked our 6 walleyes in pretty short order. Got one giant perch. Came home, fried them up. I mean, the walleye fishing is good, man. And I know there's a lot of other guys around here that have been doing great on walleyes too. I've been seeing the pictures, and everybody on Rob's have been really good on walleyes, and several other people too. I mean, it's been a great year for them. And like you said, certainly not a bad place to come walleye fishing, especially if you're looking for a meal of walleyes these days.
Yeah, and I always go back to the mentality thing where they say no one's going to agree to this restrictive bags and maybe a complete shutdown on certain lakes. people spend a lot of money to go to Canada and not bring any walleyes home.
Yeah, and
bring
but back
they can catch them all day.
Bring you back any at all? Absolutely. There's
you know,
definitely,
it's such a pain in the ass where you have
to, for that.
Yeah, I mean the how you have to freeze them to bring them across the border. Everyone's like, I'm not going to go through all that just to bring home two walleyes or whatever the hell on that conservation license that they let you bring home.
Yeah.
So there is that demand there. You know, I saw that when they were talking about the 50-inch size limit on the 20 lakes up here for muskies 8 years ago, 10 years ago, and everyone's like, no one's going to come here if they can't kill a 36-inch fish. And we're like, well, there's resorts in northern Minnesota and Canada packed with people that just want to catch a bunch of fish. Yeah. You know, have a crack at a big fish. Yeah, so that mentality is slowly changing. It's not the, what they call my fish hawks that my, like, grandpa, you know, he would yell at us for throwing big bass back, you know. So,
yeah. It's like definitely a paradigm shift. Definitely a paradigm shift with the younger generation in particular. Still guys that like to eat fish, myself one of them. I like to have a fish fry, but like I said, when I do it, I do that exactly like we did last night. You know, I think I have one bag of fish in the freezer, and I'm not even sure if I have that. I know I fried up my last bag. I'm sure there's one that's hiding in there from this winter, because I know I had nothing in there that's older than this winter for fish, and it's just kind of a, hey, want to go do this? Yeah, let's go do it. And went out, caught some fish, and I mean, there's nothing better. Fresh food.
Yeah,
not everybody has that
thing,
luxury, I understand that, but nothing better than a fresh fish fry. But definitely
that's
for going over.
That's another thing I was always thinking. Imagine if they shut the Minocqua chain down. Getting on shutdowns, it sounds like I'm someone from PETA, but if you shut down the no northern pike kept out of the Minocqua chain for 5 years and see what we could grow. I always get back to those big pike.
If you did a link for a candidate for big pike, that would certainly be one of the tops of the list, you know. Or even just putting on a size limit for their slots or something. You could certainly do it that way too, but it's always, we don't mean to be all doom and gloom. There's certainly plenty of good fishing around. It's just, it is nice to see some of these more, conservation-minded approaches being taken, and it's even more exciting to see them being successful.
Exactly. Well, I know that you got a hard out tonight, so I can't even get into a duck hunting forecast or a steelhead forecast or any of that other stuff, so we'll get that. Next time around. So how can people get a hold of you if they're looking to maybe get a trip in this fall or a duck hunting or a steelhead out of Green Bay?
Yeah, you can find me on my website, which is WisconsinMuskieWithAY.fishingguide.com, or my duck hunting website is WisconsinDuckHunts.com, or you can find me on Facebook at WDH Guide Service or Jeff Vandermortel /WDH Guide Service or at Jeff Vandermortel. All pretty easy to find me. My number is 920-639-6286. And I'm pretty full between now and ice fishing, but looking forward to the ice fishing. I suppose that'll be the next thing. Yeah, we got ducks coming up here. Pretty stoked for that. And ice fishing's right around the corner. Be coming right out and right out of the gates there. Duck season closes first weekend in December. Be back up and fishing here a couple days after that, assuming the ice is good, which we'll find out. But yeah, life's good, man. Good luck fishing.
All right, man. I'm going to sign off here. Hang on a second on the line, and I want to thank everybody for tuning in. I want to especially thank Jeff. This is always a good one with him. We'll get him on more often this fall and a little bit this winter. And everybody, thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you next week. Oh.
We heard about it. We understand that Jay is excited about, you know, his new weapons, but it's the same old Jay.